Welcome back to the Wide World of Wargaming. This is Alex, and today we are going to be reviewing quite a few events. We're also going to be taking a look at one of the bigger models for the Destruction Grand Alliance. Here with me are Garrett, John, and Jeremy is back, our French overlord replacing Matthew. He's going to be out today. Garrett, what's on your workbench?
Well, I've been having a bit of faction ADD recently, so I've been jumping between both my death and my Khorne. So this week, I am now on Khorne, and so I'm painting up my judgments because I've been using all three in my current list and having a lot of fun with them. So, yeah, I got nothing to drink tonight, just a glass of water. John, haven't heard from you in a while. What do you have on your tasty workbench tonight?
Sure. I actually have some delightful coconut shrimp on my tasty workbench right now, as a matter of fact. Because we're recording on a Monday, I'm just barely rolling in. Wife gave me a dirty look as I took the shrimp into the hobby room, so I'll try to turn off the mic as I crunch on my shrimp. Other than that, I've been working on my Vermin Lord Warp Seer. I got him built up a couple weeks ago, and now I've started throwing the paint on him. I did all my Zenithal highlighting, put the shadows in on him. And now I'm doing some, not really base coats. Well, I guess base coats, but kind of pre-base coating. In particular, being as he's a warp seer, I'm going to try for a more Tzeentch kind of a color scheme on him. So Ooh. Think of like how you might paint Fate Weaver, but doing it, of course, with the Vermin Lord. So for his skin, I'm going for a more avian skin color, a little bit paler color. And of course, then floating in all the pinks and teals and all that good stuff. So that is basically what I've been focusing on. I got quite a bit of work left on him, so I'll be talking about him for a few weeks, I'm sure. How about you, Jeremy? What have you been up to, my friend?
I've been painting up some Fire Slayers for the Riptide. I'm super excited to bring them to the event that's coming up. So I still got to work through some Hearthguard Berserkers, but other than that, that's all my workbench. Unfortunately, keeping it sober tonight. No fancy drink for me. How about you, Alex? What's on your workbench?
Oh, man. Well, I'm having every single mic issue under the sun tonight, so we're going to be trying a little bit of a different route today. So I have poured myself a nice rosé, an Underwood rosé, but I don't need to necessarily have anything on my workbench. I don't really have anything on my workbench, but I could afford to maybe paint my Reapers and some of my other death units a little bit more for Riptide, just so you can merc them with your Hearthguard. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have on my workbench. So, it's not much. At this point in time, I'm just waiting out the General's Handbook to really make any big changes with my army. So you know how it is. I know you're excited with those Hearthguard, though. And I'm happy to hear about that Warp Seer. The Warp Seers are beat face. And to be honest, I don't ever want to fight one. But I know I'm going to have to, John. So
yes, you will.
Yeah. And we're actually going to be touching base on that unit in particular just a little later today as well. But we did want to review a few events today. Now, we were going to touch base on two events a little earlier that will not be named because the events did not have uploaded lists in Best Coast Pairing. So for all you TOs out there listening in, please make sure that you do have uploaded lists as a requirement for registration because we'd love to talk about not only your event, but also the players as well. That being said, Garrett, you were at an event this weekend, is that right?
I was at an event this weekend.
Tell us a little bit about it.
So it was a fun little 8-man RTT down in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Game Garrison down there, they are running a monthly RTT these days, and so I get to go out and practice with my lists. We only got 8 people out this time. A lot of the regulars had to have varying life and other things, so we just got to have a nice little fun event. I played Sylvaneth, Nighthaunt, and then Skaven. Sylvaneth player was, I believe, a local. He seemed to be coming back in the game. He was very knowledgeable about 1.0 and seemed to be getting up to speed on all the 2.0 new books. Like, he played Khorne back in 1.0, but he had not played the new Khorne book yet. So basically, my Hexagore Skulls went to town on him. He had 6 wounds left on his Tree Lord Ancient, then rolled a natural 8 on the heal spell, exploding and doing 6 mortal wounds to him, 6 mortal wounds to another wizard, and 4 mortal wounds to another wizard, basically neutering his whole army on places of arcane power. So we called it at that point. That was bottom of turn 2. So the skulls just shut down his army. The next army I played was a friend of mine that I get to play often, Justin. He is really liking Nighthaunt. He's just sticking with it. He knows that legions generally perform better, but he really wants to make Nighthaunt work. So I've been working with
Nighthaunt. Is great. I don't know what you're talking about in that game.
He's a very new player to the competitive scene, and so it is a harder army to play, let's say, instead of a worse army compared to legions. So I've definitely been working with him, and as I've been working with him, I have to agree with you, Jeremy. I actually really like Nighthaunt as I've seen him play it and I've seen it perform. I am very impressed with 40 chain rasps with the Guardian of Souls and Nightmare Lantern near them. It's quite terrifying. I usually beat him, and I did this time. 6 Skull Crushers just tear through Nighthaunt. My many, many attacks just get through those one wound models, even though they ignore rend, because I don't have rend though. So, then my last opponent was our good friend James O'Brien, a local clubmate, and this was a brutal game. He brought his Adepticon Skaven list, so it was 40 Storm Vermin, 2 units of 40 clan rats, I believe.
He had a 40 and a 20 in there.
A 40 and a 20. Okay. I mean, the clan rats didn't do anything all game, so I don't know how much they were. Then he had a Warbringer, Warpseer, Greyseer on a Bell, normal Greyseer, Balewind, Cogs, Warp Lightning Vortex. So basically, those storm.
And a Vermintide. He had 240 points worth of endless spells in there.
I had 140 points worth of Corn Judgments. So
that is hilarious.
Yeah. Basically, I took the first turn and I put my skulls down his throat with the Blood Secretor for the forcing of reroll. I used Gore Pilgrim, so I got the 24-inch Blood Secretor. And we're playing Gift from the Heavens. So turn 1, I just jammed the skulls down his throat, which shut down his initial casting. He was unable to get the Warp Lightning Vortex off. And then those 40 Storm Vermin.
Do you guys want to know a trick that you probably played wrong during that game?
Well, he never got it off.
Well, the thing is, apparently, if you use the Warp Stones for Greyseers, the spells cannot be modified or rerolled. Period. So I don't know why they wrote it that way, but like it completely negates Hexbane, your banner, anything that penalizes their casting.
Yes, we did play that wrong then. Because that definitely made a difference. My Hexagore skulls and the Blood Secretor banner definitely made a huge difference on the Greyseer. But I charged my 20 Blood Warriors into his Storm Vermin. They had 3 up save because they were in cover, rerolling ones, and it was Mystical Terrain. I killed 3 Storm Vermin, and then he just killed the whole unit. It was 86.
Wait, wait. You only killed 3 of the Storm Vermin?
Yeah. Oh, it was all. He also had the Realm of Light spell on him, so they were -1 to hit. So I was -1 to hit. He had a 3 up save and cover with reeling ones because of Mystic Shield, and then a 6 up from Mystical. So I killed 3 Storm Vermin with 20 Blood Warriors. Actually, I only attacked 10 at them because as soon as I saw that, I was like, I'm going to try to hit his. I did 4 wounds to his Warbringer and 2 wounds to his Bell with the Gorglaives. But yeah, I didn't kill any of the Storm Vermin, and then with 90 attacks on the Storm Vermin on 3s and 2s, reeling 1s to hit and wound, he killed the whole unit. And then he just basically pushed up, but I had Skull Crushers in cover, and he was attacking the Skull Crushers. So he just slogged through them, and I was able to kill more Storm Vermin, and we just kind of slogged through. The Bloodthirster took out the Warbringer. And then we played very cagey. It was a very cagey game because my Bloodthirster had a 6-inch pylon. I was using the Unfettered Fury one, mm-hmm. and I had the relic for the 4 up strike first. Always strike first.
Yeah.
So real quick, I want to interject here. You didn't use the Insensate Rage?
I did not use the Insensate Rage. I feel the 6-inch pile-in on the Unfettered Fury is how you deal with the war of activations that we have right now. Also, I don't like that the Insensate Rage hits on a 4 naturally, so he's very reliant upon Killing Frenzy or some relic that gives him +1 to hit. At this particular event, we were not using Realm Relics, so I couldn't give him like the Amberglaive, but the Unfettered Fury having a 6-inch pile-in, and I have Hew the Foe from my command trait on him, so he's doing 6 attacks at 3s, rerolling 1s, 2s, rent 2, d3, +1 damage.
Yeah.
So with that 6-inch pylon allows me to actually do work with him instead of just being killed by someone who strikes first. Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, I do it that way.
And what is the artifact you have on him? The Cartooth of Blood Hunger.
Basically at the start of the combat phase on a 4+, I strike at the start of the combat phase.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It's a gambler's relic. It's if you really want to add more dice rolls to your army.
Yeah, if we were using Realm Relics, I would have gone for the Blade of Symmetry, which is an additional +1 damage. So I'd have 6 attacks doing D3 +2 damage.
That's fun. That's fun. That's normal. I mean, D3 +2, minimum 3.
You really don't want to do the double thirster thing, huh? Come on.
Come on. You want to be cool, right? You want to be cool.
No, it's hard for me to find the points for two thirsters in my list. Mm-hmm. I like having a more balanced army. I don't want to fully commit to a specific style. I only have one available relic since I have to take an quote unquote ethereal amulet required from being Gortide. So my Bloodsecrator is immune to rend.
Okay.
It came down to his Storm Vermin just chewed through my whole army. It went to turn 5 and it was 17-19 on Gift from the Heavens. I was able to pull off a little cheeky where I retreated with the Bloodthirster and then summoned Bloodletters onto his objective that he had abandoned. But his Clan Rats went over and stole my objective and was like, I'm not going to kill Clan Rats with 20 Blood Reavers. So, yeah, it was a super brutal game. I efficiently used my Blood Tithe, but I needed to do more damage to the Storm Vermin before he could get Death Frenzy or any of those things off.
Yeah.
So just couldn't deal with it. So great event. Due to minor victories on all of the other 2 and 1 players, I got second place because I had 2 major victories and 1 major loss, and then James got first place.
Yeah. At the event. And let's talk about James's list. You know, his good old Skaven. Now, you yourself mentioned that you played against him. Mm-hmm. Jeremy, have you been able to take a look at James's list?
No, I just heard it from our lovely co-host, Garrett. No, it's actually very, like, atypical Skaven list. For my opinion in terms of what is, like, the meta Skaven list, mostly because it's not overwhelmingly shooty and it's not overwhelmingly magic focused. I mean, it has
a casters, ton of magic.
But it's not like like 240 points for endless spells, and we'll talk about this later, is not that much in like a meta Skaven list. We'll go through the South Coast GT. Like, you'll find out there's one list I almost spent like 500 points in endless spells. So
wow, that's a lot. That he does have 8 casts in this list though, so that's quite a bit of casting.
Yeah, it's just for Skaven, it's so easy to get like 6 like baseline with like 3
characters. I was annoyed. He cast within 12. He had 3 wizards within 12 inches of both the Hexagore Skulls, and he did 6 casting and never got a natural 8. I was so annoyed.
I actually played a practice game against my teammate and local friend Kyle, who's trying to learn how to play Skaven. And I played my Khorne army because I still want to live vicariously through you, Garrett. or I guess invoke your in my games. And he taught me like, yeah, that Warpstone thing completely neuters like the psychic, the magic defense for Khorne. Like it's crazy to me that like, it's like you use that once per hero phase on a Gracier, and it's just basically, yeah, you can't stop me from casting Vortex or Death Frenzy. It's insane to me. But basically, yeah, John, what do you think about James's list? I mean, you're the one who's our resident rat player.
Yeah.
Well, I find it pretty interesting. excuse me. I was sneaking a shrimp in while Jeremy was talking there.
Anyways,
the main thing I notice on it is, you know, he brought that big block of storm vermin. And, you know, 40 storm vermin, as you discovered, Garrett, hit like they're crazy, right? That is a ridiculous amount of attacks, 2-inch range. They have rend on the attack. Good quality unit. That is 500 points for that unit.
It's worth every penny.
So it seems to me when I look at this list that he has to do a lot of work with those storm vermin. Like, that's the main punch of this list is he's going to send those out. He's going to flank them, or he's going to protect them with the clan rats, hold some objectives, that kind of stuff. But he wants to shove the fully buffed, maximum buffed up storm vermin down your throat. And again, you know, whatever they touch, they're going to kill. He can probably buff them up.
Not only that, he puts double death frenzy on them. So every one you kill, he piles in and attacks twice against you.
Oh, that is amazing. Wait, how do you get double death frenzy?
The Warbringer, the dreaded one, right?
Yep. The dreaded death frenzy plus the Gracier, the Master Clan spell death frenzy. So you can put.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. He has the dreaded death frenzy and then whatever. Yeah. So that makes sense. Anyway, so that is just incredibly nasty stuff. I'm thinking that at that point, those things are hitting much harder than Plague Monks. They do have a nice defense, right? They have, what, a 5-up save going on with the changes to the clan shields there. So
they have a 4-up save after clan shields.
Yeah, is it a 4-up save? Even better. And I'll tell you what, he is rocking still 147 wounds with this list. So it's not like he's short of anything. And we're talking, what, 2 Vermin Lords and a Gracier and a Screaming Bell. So that is 3 big tough characters, each of which has the protection of the Great Horned Rat. So we'll call it the Rat Save, right? It's like a death save, but now it's the Rat Save. So they're going to be really hard to kill, casting all over the place. And let's face it, when you're rocking a Screaming Bell, what is that? On average, I would say, what, 1 out of 3 games, you're going to actually summon a Vermin Lord. And I'm sure James had a little Vermin Lord Corruptor or some other kind of Vermin Lord sitting off to the side for when he rolled that 12 to summon it in, right?
He actually forgot his Vermin Lord, but I think he brings the Forge World one.
He brings the Forge World one, even nastier. I've been eyeing that guy. I have one over here in my collection waiting to be built. And
he just bought his 5th of 6 Vermin Lords off of his winnings. So now he owns 5 Vermin Lords. He just needs to buy the 6th one. He'll have collected them all.
Are these like Infinity Stones?
Yeah, I need to step up. I only have 3 of them. I feel like I'm not living the true rat life now.
I hope. I'm sorry, but I really hope they address those in the next general headbook. I don't understand how they priced those models at all.
Well, that's going to be a year.
What are you talking
now
about? They're way overcosted. I'm thinking they should be like a 220, maybe 200 point model at the most.
Hold on. I am woefully ignorant, okay, with Skaven simply because I haven't really played them at all in, you know, since they had the Battle Tome. How much are Vermin Lords at this point in time?
260.
260 all for of all them of them, yeah.
All of them flat are 260 points.
Except the king. The king is more, but all the rest are 260.
How much is the king?
It's like 300 or something.
Yeah, 300.
Ooh, that's a spicy meatball.
It's crazy to me that these are like level 2 casters with monster stat lines and 260 points.
What a 5-up.
What the hell? Like even the Keeper of Secret, right? It's like how many points is that coming at for Hina Knights? Like
360.
40? Oh my god. Like who priced it? They forgot a typo, right? They just forgot the 3 instead of
2. No, I'm telling you, they are way overcosted. I tell you, because it's not like they don't all kick ass in melee and have shooting, right? And it's not like they have some kind of a mortal wound save added to them, right? So command abilities on top of that, custom badass spells, way, way overcosted. I'm actually thinking more like 180. I'm looking there at the Screaming Bell, right? And that's 200, so that's what a Vermin Lord should be.
I mean, as you guys know from my White Coast GT experience, I put over 130 wounds on one of those and didn't kill it. And I was like, cool. That's 260 point model. Just took out like basically effectively 2000 points of killing power.
It also soaked up about 135 wounds, right?
Yeah. It did. Sorry, did I not say that clearly?
We couldn't hear it through the salt in your voice. It made it a little hard to understand what you were saying there.
Honestly, I just wanted to bring it up again.
I just want to say, like, if they make every equivalent monster hero that price point, I can't wait to see some more Eidolons on the table.
Okay.
So what you're saying is that the Vermin Lord is equivalent to the Mathland of the Sea? No way. I mean, they don't have the same shooting line, and certainly the melee is not comparable in every way, shape, and form, right?
Yeah.
There's no shoal of fish. I mean, now maybe if there was like a shoal of skittering rats attacking too, we could start talking, but I'm sure that alone is worth 140 points.
Oh my God, John, you're triggering me so much.
Okay. Well, you know, that seemed like a really fun event, but there was another event that went off across the pond in the UK. You know, for those, Garrett, yeah.
Can I say one thing before we move on? I do want to give a shout out to Jason. He's running a local guy running Flesh Eater Courts, but he's using a lot of Crypt Flayers. And he gave James a run for his money because those Crypt Flayers all have a bravery screen. So he's a unit of 9. They all each roll 2d6 compared to the bravery. So he was murdering rats left and right with that bravery 4. And the bell has bravery like 7 or some or 6. And so he was able to do a ton of mortal wounds to rats. So I do want to he was using blister skin for the extra move on all of those flares. He had the flares as battle line. Really cool list. Really great guy. Avoiding the Gristlegore. So just wanted to give a shout out to him before we moved on from the event.
Yeah. Sounds like the guy did great. We did have an event across the pond. There was the South Coast GT 2019. You know, this was a rather big event. And the UK Masters League is always a pretty big fanfare, or one that comes with quite a bit of fanfare, including Warhammer TV coverage. Now, in this event, they did have 6 rounds that they did go over. They had quite a few in multiple realms, anything from Hyish, Gur, Ulgu, Shyish, Asqui, and Gairan. So, you know, there were 6 match play missions over the weekend, and the event was technically called Chamber of the Soul, the 11th Soul, and we had some interesting lists, but I do have to say, having the top 14 lists or players primarily be new battle tomes was not a surprise at all for me. You know, for those who weren't able to keep up with the event, the first, second, and third place players were Jack Armstrong, who got first place as Daughters of Cain. Second place was a Ben Sava with Daughters of Cain. And the third place best general was Tom Malzdi. I'm probably butchering that last name. Sorry, Tom. But he brought Skaventide. Now, there's a lot to look over with these lists. But before we really dive into the lists themselves, with just the event overall, Garrett, what were some of your thoughts regarding this event?
I mean, South Coast GT is a famous event. It's been running for years. I believe it was the event that kicked off the General's Handbook, because they're the ones who were building the wound points. It's a great event, I hear. I've never actually been, but I've only heard good things about it. John, what do you think of the top breakdown yourself? Of the top 14.
Sure. First off, like you said, the South Coast GT is kind of one of those litmus events. These are the guys that kind of brought Age of Sigmar out of the Dark Ages and into the world of points or power level or whatever you want to call what we have here. As far as the actual winners, you know, I go down the list here. And first off, I want to mention that What's really nice is AOS Shorts. Not only did they do a nice preview of this event, so we got to read up ahead of time, got us excited about the players and what's going on. They did some nice live coverage. You know, what are the different, who's playing in different rounds? What is the TV coverage? So once again, AOS Shorts always doing an excellent job. And then I look at the placings and honestly, what do I see? I see, yeah, some Daughters of Cain, some more Daughters of Cain, who cares? And then I see Skaven in third and fourth place. So realistically, looking at the top six here, we had Daughters of Cain in first and second, Jack Armstrong and Ben Sava in that first and second, like you said, and then Tom Maudsley in third with Skaven and Ricky Mee in fourth with Skaven, and then Chris Mihail and Mark Wildman. Chris, of course, brought, it just says order, so I'm assuming mixed order, if I go and zoom it in on his list, which is lower on the page. And but when I look here at Tom Maudsley's Skaven list, and I think it's kind of funny, especially considering what we were just joking about with Jeremy there. You're going to love this list, Jeremy. Okay, it's a Skaven tide list.
John, and he has just double check, just overall thoughts, and then we do want to dive into lists.
Oh, do we? Okay, my bad. Well, you know what? Then those are my overall thoughts.
So my overall thoughts about this event is Tom Maudsley's Skaven list. And
Bastard.
Wow. Okay. Cold-blooded.
I did not know that this event was the one that like kind of kicked off General Handbook. So thank you for the history, Garrett. That's cool. And I'm honestly also kind of curious. Like, I was trying to dig up in from AOS Shorts, like, what kind of, like, do they just play straight book missions? Like, what do they have a special, like, custom mission format? Do you know at all by any chance, Garrett?
They used the straight book missions. They had each of the rounds up.
Oh, yes.
I know the last round was Scorched Earth, and they were using hidden objectives, and I believe they gave you points for both getting your hidden objective and denying your opponent their hidden objective. Oh, so that's how you're able to get the total hidden objective points. And you got 16 points a round for a major victory, and then I think 2 points for your hidden objective and 2 points for denying your opponent's hidden objective.
Wow.
That's awesome. It's denying your opponent's hidden objective is basically just like purely luck, though, unless you're like just playing all like hidden objectives, right?
I think they revealed them all. I didn't hear offhand, but I believe you had to reveal your hidden objective at the beginning.
Okay. Well,
yeah, and it was 1 point for each hidden objective that you got, and one for each one that your opponent did not complete. And they called them TP's tournament points.
Yeah,
it sounds like
Is worth mentioning is they also included painting, cohesiveness of the army. Was your list on time? Was your list legal and in the correct format? And then, of course, all the actual game-based.
I love that so much. You know, John, you, as a tournament organizer, you know, a lot of things that you base your soft scores on are, you know, you're very well known for having the self-serviced sportsmanship score. And I got to say, that was groundbreaking when you had first shared that with me. And I do think that truly is a really useful way to test someone's mettle for sportsmanship, because you know you yourself have in that list, you know, did you bring your list? Did you bring all the supplies? Did you conduct yourself in a good manner? So it's a lot of self-reflection in that sportsmanship score, which I think is fantastic. So being able to able to see something like that, you know, they may not have been able to see something that you had created, but it's really great to see that, you know, people across the country, you know, across the world, across the country, you know, people are starting to get the same idea, which I think is great.
Yeah, I always like that. It's, you know, let's put it all into one score. If we're going to really call this a cohesive hobby, then how your army looks, how you act, and how you play should all come together to determine who is truly the champion of the day. I mean, you can't be a champion with gray plastic and being a jerk, right?
Right.
Yeah, of course you can. I don't.
Well, Jeremy gets an exception there. So take a look at the list here. You know, the top three or potentially top four, if the Skaven players are of the mind, are definitely very interesting. I don't feel as though it is my ability to review any of the Skaven lists, though I do have to say third place, Tom's list is hilarious with three vermin lords. Four vermin lords. I'm sorry. Did I miss that?
Yes, you did.
Oh, he's a named vermin lord. So, John, our resident Skaven player, how do you feel about four vermin lords on the table?
Glorious. Best list ever. And being as he took third place, right, there's not much to argue with there. I think it does speak to Jeremy's point. Maybe these guys are, maybe they're cost appropriate or a little low on the cost appropriate side, shall we say. But he came in here with his Vermin Lord Warpseer, made him the master of magic, as you would expect. Of course, Vermin Lord Corruptor, getting the Sword of Judgment. So, right, those first two guys, I mean, those are the most common ways I see both of those Vermin Lords ran. I run both of mine that way. The Vermin Lord Deceiver, you know, another caster, another decent guy. He's a little bit more combat oriented, so can do some fun stuff there. Not sure exactly if he has something sneaky in mind, maybe combining that with the Skitter Leap down there. And of course, Lord Screech, the Vermin King, the big bad boy, coming in again, more casting, more kicking ass. But interesting enough, he only has three blocks of 20 clan rats, which I guess is kind of the minimum to cover what he needs. And then, my gosh, listen to these endless spells. He has the Aether Void Pendulum, the Geminids. He has the Soul Snare Shackles, the Umbral Spell Portal, the Vermintide, the Warp Lightning Vortex, the Chronomantic Cogs. And if that isn't enough, he also managed to throw in the Prismatic Palisade, probably just because he had a couple points left over. So what is that, about 400 points worth of endless spells?
I don't want to count it. Correct. I don't want to count the exact amount of points.
That's 400 of endless spells. No, it has to be less than that because, let's see, three clan rats comes out to 360 points. And then he's easily got 700, we call that 1,100 points, almost 1,200 in Vermin Lords. Yeah, I guess that would be about 400 points worth of endless spells.
Bravo.
Man. Right? I would love to see this spell in this list in action. Now, one thing, obviously, his entire game happens in the hero phase. He is doing nothing but lots of spell casting, lots of things happen in there. And then I assume, I don't know, I guess he's going to stick some clan rats on some objectives while he's just nuking you apart with spells. Or maybe he's just sending in a whole wall of vermin lords. I mean, I don't think of him necessarily as a combat character, but being charged by four of them, that might put a hurt on you. I don't know. What do you think, Jeremy? What would you do against all those vermin lords besides complain about their points cost?
Oh, I wouldn't. Thank you. Thank you for letting me get that out of the way for me. I wouldn't honestly, firstly, I want to clarify, those clan rats weren't scoring objectives. They were just the cheerleaders. They were just cheering from the sidelines while their superhero team, you know, we could call this the Skaven super friend list, basically just ramming your opponent and controlling the board, because I think the trick he's doing is with the Soul Snare Shackles, the Vermintide, the Warp Lightning Vortex, and the Prismatic Palisade, he's just basically clogging the table lanes for like armies which are do not have fly, are not able to like maneuver very quickly. Like, it's just like, you know, even Vermintide next to Prismatic Palisade can block off like a good like 8 inches of movement for anyone. And then on top of that, if you can't run because Warp Lightning Vortex
or fly,
and you lose the ability, you lose half your movement spell with movement ability with Snore Snare Shackles. Like, he's just literally controlling. He gets to pick a flank and say that flank ain't going anywhere, and then just focus the rest of his mortal wound output on whatever other flank he wants to destroy. I think it's really cool, but it's also very not interactive for your opponent. If your entire army functions in the hero phase, I'm guessing Tom must be a very nice guy because I don't think he would be getting a lot of sportsmanship points for an army that basically never has to play with his opponent, basically. But that's just my takeaway on that. What do you think, Garrett?
I mean, I believe this is a list that either won or got second place at a tournament shortly after the book was released. And yeah, no, it's just it definitely is the Super Friends casting all of those endless spells. He's a fantastic player from what I've heard and seen. He's created this trick when it first came out of using the Warp Lightning Vortex right in front of Gristlegore Terrorgeist and then putting the Vermintide in the middle of it so that on a three places of power mission. And so he basically blocked off the middle objective because the guy couldn't fly over the Vermintide anymore because he lost fly. So he has to go around this giant Warp Lightning Vortex. So he knows especially how to place his units very carefully, how to place all of his spells very carefully. He controls the movement of the board. He's got double skitter leap, so he can jump where he needs to go. It's a very tactical list. I think in the wrong hands, it'll do very poorly. Like if you get Alpha Striked and you didn't know how to screen correctly or whatever, you'll just lose. I think it does well because he is a fantastic player. Because as John said, the Vermin Lords aren't particularly great combat characters. They're powerful, they're tough, but against a dedicated combat unit, they're going to go down. So I think it does well because he is a really good player.
Oh yeah, I definitely think player skill played a big role with this. You know, this is a great list. And again, congratulations on Tom for getting third place with 400 points worth of endless spells. That's an admiral trait and an admiral quality in a general. So I do want to take a look, however, on two, you know, both first and second place, both Jack Armstrong and Ben Sava. They both played the same army. In fact, not only did they both play the same army, but it looks to me as though they might have played the same sub-faction within that army, though one isn't necessarily indicated. And these are both Daughters of Cain lists. You know, Jack Armstrong, who did get first, he brought Hagnar in the realm of Gur. He brought Marathi, a Slaughter Queen, Disciples with the Glyph Feather Charm. He had a bunch of stuff added to that Slaughter Queen. Two other Hag Queens. A Knight in Cantor ally, two blocks of 30 witch elves, one with knives and one with bucklers, a 10-man unit of elves, two units of five canaries, the Cauldron Guard, and he actually had his hidden agendas listed on his army list, which I thought was interesting, and I don't know if that was something that needed to happen. For this first place list, Garrett, what are your thoughts on this very... I wouldn't necessarily call this unique, but very effective Daughters of Cain list.
So I did have the pleasure of watching the second half of his last game versus a Gristlegore list, and it is definitely a brutal list. I mean, he had six Witch Elves targeting the Terrorgeist and with all of their buffs, and they did 8 of his 14 wounds with just 6 Witch Elves. So they hit really hard. I believe the Knight in Cantor is there because he has the once per game auto unbind. So he has a nice defensive unit right there. And Marathi is just brutal. She's only takes the 3 wounds a turn. I believe he auto reses her when needs and just charges forward. But yeah, no, it looks to be like a typical Hagnar list. He's got the Devoted Disciples command trait. He's got Blessing of Cain, so he's got a rerollable 5+ or he needs it. So it's a pretty typical list that just, in the right hands, does well. And I think it goes to show why Daughters of Cain were winning very often until the drop of all the new books. Jeremy, how do you feel about this list?
Nothing excites me about that list. Jack Armstrong playing it excites me. So I'll put it that way. It's just it's a very typical like Hagnar list. There's nothing like unique about it, except maybe the Knight in Cantor, but that's just because of the rise of, you know, mostly casting heavy armies. Like not even like there's not even even he didn't use the trick of that with like or trying to like get the mind razor off on a unit of like bravery 10 witch elves. Like, there's nothing really like unique about the list. So I'm repeating myself at this point. I'm just trying to get excited. I'm just not like so, but I do. I'll leave it up to John to get my blood pumping. I'm more excited about the next one.
You know, it's funny. I'm looking at the top two lists for this, you know, both, of course, being Daughters of Cain, and pretty similar lists in so much as all Daughters of Cain, successful Daughters of Cain lists have kind of some common elements to them. So if you've played against somebody and they were kicking ass, the list looked a whole lot like this. I mean, what's worth noting, we've got the witches in there with the bucklers. Those are the ones that are going to be reflecting the mortal wounds back at us, right? And then we've got the my super favorite canary life takers that if you don't watch what you're doing are going to grab some objectives in your backfield or something like that. Other than that, they're not too terribly scary, but they will go where they want to be. I mean, lots of choppy choppy. If you can't stand up to the choppy choppy, you are lots of dead. You know, that's about all I'd say. I looked at this other one. What's this? This slaughter troop battalion. Does anyone know what that is offhand?
Yeah, it's very good. It's lets them retreat and retreat and shoot or charge. It's another battalion you don't see as often, but it's requires Sisters of Slaughters and Canary Heartrenders, which the Heartrenders I believe are the shooty version of the Canaries, not the melee one.
Right. So that's why he's taking those ones specifically.
Yep.
I think we reviewed somebody's list that was doing the same battalion for the Winter's War, if I remember correctly. If I check the list
similar.
You played against
it's
there,
got
Alex?
30 less. My bad. Looking at that second place list, it's got 60 Sisters of Slaughter. The one I fought against had 90 witches, but only 10 Sisters of Slaughter. However, at the event in Portland gotcha. That we all went to except for Garrett, there was an individual who did bring a block of 20 or 30 Sisters of Slaughter in his list, which I think took a lot of people by surprise because it was packed on with at least one big unit of witches. And Sisters of Slaughter have a 6-inch pile in, and everyone forgets that.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Mm.
It's more than a 6-inch python, right? They can actually activate and
correct. And they have a 2-inch range.
So the reason why I want to talk about this list more is mostly because he geared for meta, or bear, whatever you want to call it. Ben is basically thought he was going to be playing against a lot of mechanics, which are always strike first. And he brought the unit, the answers to that mechanic, right? He brought the Sisters of Slaughters with the 6-inch activation, giving them the ability to circumvent striking the start of the combat phase. He also brought the Slaughter Queen and a Cold in Her Blood, which is a requirement for the Slaughter Troop, but it's usually not seen that often, typically in a Hagnar list, but because Cauldron Guard requires you can just take a Hag Queen, double up on the Hag Queens. And I believe he's doing that because he wants the double activation in the hero. Sorry, one activation in the hero phase that the Slaughter Queen gets, which is, I mean, it's really nice if you want to go overkill on the damage output. And then he also took the Medusa, which is, like, I think is a nice toolbox. Like, his entire army is basically designed for a toolbox in the meta. Medusa does mortal wounds for big blocks of infantry. It deals with 9 on. It deals with really anything that's like high, low value save and large model count. And then he brought like the big beefy units that can basically circumvent always strike first. I'm still disappointed that no one's running big blocks of the Blood Sisters, and then they're still running Marathi. I mean, I get why. I just, it'd be kind of cool to see Blood Sisters on the table. And it's my takeaway, Alex. It's my two.
Fair enough. Hey, real quick, when we're talking about a 6-inch pile in, how does that work exactly? I mean, does that mean that I can move, say, 5 inches away from you and then without charging, activate
That's
and
pile
correct. In that 6 inches?
Yes.
Ooh, wow, that is really brutal.
The biggest thing, you can run
real quick
and do your 6-inch pile in too.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to charge.
Garrett,
oh, wow.
I do want to say, in particular with what Jeremy was saying as the anti-meta, the being able to attack when you're piling in, it came up in Jack's last game, because against Gristlegore, one of the big things is that even if they die, they still attack you, but that only works in the combat phase. So having a hero phase pile in or a couple of shooting attacks allows you to finish off those big meaty guys that would be able to pile in the combat phase even if they died. So that is a nice little trick there.
Oh yeah, that's a really great boon for them. I gotta say, Scissors of Slaughter have been a thorn in my side more times than I can count. You know, just like John mentioned, you know, they don't have to be, you know, as long as they're within 6 inches, they can in fact consolidate even if they're out of combat, which with those 2-inch range weapons can be a nightmare. So, you know, you can either start them early, especially if you have the blessing on them that lets them attack again after death. You can definitely slap that on a 5-up. They do mortal wounds back ability onto them. Or, you know, you can wait till the end of the combat phase, till your opponent thinks that they are free and clear. And then all of a sudden you have, you know, a quarter or a third or more of this giant Sisters of Slaughter unit suddenly attacking something you are not expecting to be in combat. So I think it's great.
We can't completely wait until the end of the combat phase, because if you are chosen to pick a unit and it's your only unit, you will have to pick that unit.
True. It would depend on how many combats are ongoing with your units in particular. Yeah.
Well, the nice thing, the trick you can do, right, and I'm guessing that's what Ben Salva was doing, is you can send in your Canary Heart Renders into combat with something. And then keep your Sisters of Slaughter 6 inches away. And I don't think Sisters of Slaughter is ever going to have a problem killing something, but if you're worried about not killing it on your pilot, you can, by sending the Heartrenders in there and forcing him to swing against the Heartrenders first, prevents him from swinging back into your Sisters of Slaughter after they pile in into the unit. Because they've been forced to activate against that unit. I'm guessing it's a trick a lot of these top players are using. It's good to have in your back pocket when you have these like 6-inch piling mechanics, since it, you know, it puts you in a defensive, like basically not getting hit is better than getting hit mechanic. So yeah, I think it's a good trick to, you know, be aware of, especially when it gets used against you for the first time. You're gonna feel really sour.
Yep.
I do want to say, like, I'm not quite sure what his Shroud of Despair pick spell is on Morathi. I don't think I've ever seen that pick on her before. Do you know what that is, Gary, by any chance?
I do not remember what that spell is.
All right, I'm going to look it up. Sorry, guys.
Good luck to all the, you know, and great job to all the players at West Coast GT, or South Coast GT, my bad. That being said, there are a few events in the States that are coming up in the near future, some big, some small, all equally good. You know, this next weekend, both Jeremy, myself, and co-host Matthew, we are going to be at the Riptide GT in Bremerton, Washington. It's going to be a great event. The Victorious Secret individuals are the ones who are going to be running this event, and it's going to be really fun to watch. They may or may not have a live stream. We're going to have to double check that, see how things go a little closer to the end of this week. But in the Bay Area, there is going to be an RTT coming up. Is that right, John?
That is correct. It's going to be called Your Mom's Tournament, put on by the guys over at Your Mom's Garage, which is a local Age of Sigmar competitive team.
Right.
Yeah, so it should be a pretty fun event. In fact, I think you guys will appreciate some of the placings that the TO has put together for this. So let me read these off to you. First place is going to be Mama's Boy. Second place is going to be Baby Huey. Third place will be The Little Rascal. And for the Wooden Spoon, Adopted.
Perfect. Oh, boy.
And I am going to be going to that event myself. So it's nice. Somebody else in the area running a tournament. So I actually get to haul my Skaven out and hopefully do bad things to everybody else.
Well, good luck on that too, John.
Thank you, and good luck to you guys next weekend as well.
In the meantime, for our listeners, if you are looking for other big events to go to, do know that in May, on the 25th or 24th, 25th, and 26th of May 2019, we are going to have the Bay Area Open for both 40K AOS and several other game systems. In addition to that, do get your tickets as soon as possible for another Pacific Northwest tournament, a GT, the T-Shift Open Grand Tournament for Age of Sigmar is going to be on the 3rd and 4th of August this year. This is going to be in Bellevue, Washington, essentially a suburb just a short drive away from Seattle, Washington. It's going to be a great time, and most of us are going to be there. So do swing by if you can, get those tickets. In the meantime, do also please feel free to subscribe and, you know, wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to rate us both on Facebook, Apple Podcasts, or otherwise. This is Alex signing out, as with Garrett, Jeremy, and John. You guys have a great night.
Winning is not a sudden
thing. Take care.
It's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.